Hello and welcome to The Great Indoors,
a podcast which reveals everything you ever needed to know about interiors and explains how to make it all really work for you in your home.
I'm Sophie Robinson.
And I'm Kate Watson-Smythe. Now, if you listened to last week's show, you will remember that we interviewed Kit Kemp in the Ham Yard Hotel for the launch of her new collection. And after she had gone, busy woman, lots to do, we managed to stay in the room afterwards, so we thought we'd record our style surgery in here before anyone notices.
We've got room service, we've got a comfy sofa.
A bed.
Yeah, time to get up, Kate. We're here to work. Although it will be interesting to see if our answers change as we're surrounded by these gorgeous soft furnishings and fabrics rather than, well, basically in our home office, surrounded by the tut of working life. I must say, I'm feeling rather inspired.
I'm feeling quite sleepy. I must have been the cake. Anyway, on that note, our first design dilemma is from Muzrat. Muzrat says, we moved into a lovely Edwardian terrace house last year with most of the period features intact or sympathetically replaced. We had a living room to the front and an open dining room kitchen to the back. Against my better judgment, I went along with my husband's dream of having a through lounge and quickly realised I should have held firm in not having it done. I'm gutted with what's become of my house. The whole of the downstairs looks a mess, nothing flows, and I'm spending all my time indoors dressed like a Scottish farmer tending to his flock on the highest mountain because I'm absolutely freezing. I'm really overwhelmed with how to make all the places work, living room, dining room, kitchen, work together while they serve their interconnected yet different functions. My ADHD brain has given up and I'm almost on the verge of sitting back and living like this for the rest of my life. Please help me get some clarity and organise my downstairs so I can be relaxed and happy again.
Oh, Muzrat. Oh, dear. Come over to the Ham Yard Hotel. Yes.
Breathe, Muzrat.
Because we're feeling so beautifully calm and blissed out that Kate might actually fall asleep.
Well, yes. So catch me while I'm awake. It's interesting, isn't it? Because there is a... I mean, perhaps it's not an obsession, but there is a feeling that, you know, walls are bad and people want open plan spaces so they can see the children or see each other or all live together in communal harmony. I mean, I like a wall.
You like a wall. I like an open plan. So there you go. We're quite different. And I guess this is, you know, Kate and I have got different opinions on this and Muzrat, so have you and your husband. And that's been the problem, I guess, in this scenario. What's really painful, actually, listening to this, even though you write very wittily and we were all having a bit of a laugh, but what I am actually really hearing is that you're quite stressed and you mentioned you've got an ADHD brain and that is maybe adding to the anxiety and the stress of there's just too much visual clutter going on. I'm getting the, you don't say this, I'm reading into this, but I'm getting the feeling that maybe you're feeling that it's just not very well organized. There's stuff in places where it shouldn't be. All you've sent us a before pic, the walls are still unplastered, maybe that's not helping. And you just need to bring some coherence, some visual coherence. Because look, here's the thing. It's only a wall's gone. You know, looking at your floor plan, it's all still the same stuff. The kitchen is still where it was originally. The dining table's still where it was originally. So it's the furniture. It's just this view and the visual clutter of this open plan space, which is stressing you out. That's what I'm hearing, rather than a problem with a particular space and layout.
I think one of the things you talk about how nothing flows, I wonder if it's about being, for you, Muzrat, quite disciplined between what these different zones are doing. You know, you may not have the walls to separate your spaces, kitchen, dining, living, working, but whether you can, you know, separate them by not having a passage, you know, can you put a sofa slightly across an opening? Can you use different floorings, as in rugs, to designate the dining space? And even then, colour. I mean, one way that people used to do it with those long spaces is have, you know, a dark colour in at the back of the house, for example, coming slightly lighter as you move through the house. So it feels cohesive and it links, but it's not a sort of riot of different colour and pattern, which I know Sophie will disagree with because she likes a riot of different colour and pattern.
Yeah, but maybe you not, need it calmer. Maybe not for Muzrat. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. You know, I think we've all got to really know ourselves in, you know, in life. haven't we, Kate? And, you know, what I'm feeling is this is, Masrat is not someone who wants to be on my maximalist fun bus of it all going on and feeling like it's just a big jolly jamboree. That's clearly her worst nightmare. So actually, you're right, Kate, take it right back, maybe quite a tonal colour palette. We know, for example, that greens are in the mid-range on the colour spectrum. They're the most relaxing colour to look at. So maybe you do like a tonal green colour story, bring in some natural woods, go easy on the pattern. And that might be the way that you can feel calmer in your space rather than it being a problem with the layout.
Well, Masrat, I'd go with that because that's very unlike Sophie to recommend a pale tonal decor. So I'd just take that and run if I were you.
Yeah, quick, let's move on. Right, who's next? Oh, we've got a voice note coming up. I think we're going to hear from Luna.
Hi, Kate and Sophie. Thank you so much for picking my question for the style surgery section. I love your podcast. It really helped my husband and I when we were decorating our first home. By the way, Kate, I have all of your books and I will be using the journal for the next house. So, we are buying the next house, which is an arts and crafts style house in the Cotswolds and is full of period features, which we love. We are planning to decorate it in a very traditional style, so think Victorian interiors, antiques. We love bold colors, wallpapers, quirky decorative items, and so on. What color should we choose for the hallway, stairs, and landings? The house is built over 4 floors, including the basement. We want it to be very interesting, something that express our vibes from the minute people come from the front door. But considering that we have quite bold color plans for all rooms, think a red wallpaper dining room, a gold ceiling kitchen. Yes, Kate, that one is influenced by you. Bedrooms in bold blues or floral wallpapers, and this is you, Sophie. The vibe we're going for is something like Sherlock Holmes' home in Baker Street meets Pemberley from Pride and Prejudice, that sort of thing. So, how do we link everything with the landings and hallway? We don't want anything safe and boring, like neutrals, but we also don't want it to turn into something like a carnival. And although I'm Brazilian and wouldn't mind it, I don't think my English husband will love it as much.
So basically what Luna wants to know is that if you and I had a decorating love child, what would it look like?
What, yeah. Frankenstein of a monster?
It would be good because it would have lots of pattern, but it would be very tonal colour. Oh, that's what I'm going with.
Oh, but what do you think of all that red, Kate? There's a lot of bright rectory red going on, cobalt blues. There's some strong colours, but don't go to carnival. Oh, I mean, feeling the fear. Yes. Where do you sit in it all?
I think that's quite a lot, isn't it? Because she says she'd quite like to go carnival, but her husband wouldn't.
Needs her to rein it in.
So, I mean, the big question, and I suppose this relates to everyone who's listening, is, you know, if your colour palette lends itself or leans towards the bright and more colourful, should your linking spaces, hall, stairs and landing, be more neutral to kind of calm you down and make the other rooms, when the doors are open, pop out? You know, is that a really nice way to do it? Is that our love child? Or do you go with it and keep everything bright from the moment you come in? I mean, I think it's going to come down to personal taste. What do you think?
I've got a feeling that what Luna needs to do is get her core colour palette together, and then you can turn up the volume or turn it down depending on how you're using room. And I think actually being here in Kit Kemp's design space, we're in a living room which at the moment has got this deep red coral on it. There's some really rich green upholstery colours. It's quite a rich, bright, but very warm and cosy.
Well, what's
palette.
Interesting is you say that it doesn't look like a Christmas tree, because when you say red and green, you immediately think Christmas tree. But because it's coral, it's quite a pinky red and a dark green.
I think a Christmas tree would look excellent in this room.
It would look excellent, but the room doesn't make me feel that it's Christmas.
But my point about this is, then you move into the bedroom and there is no colour link at all, because the bedroom is all Delft blue and white, yeah. And there's no green. Oh, actually, there's a tiny little hint of orange. That's why she's so clever, isn't it?
It's a tiny,
she's got
tiny,
a
link.
Tiny bit of orange, yeah. And we're seeing a little bit of orange in here. But I think in terms of a colour palette, they're of a similar family and tone. They're quite rich. Like the blue in the bedroom is a warm, soft blue. It's quite a strong, warm, soft blue. It's not a cool blue. And the reds and the greens in here have got real warmth and softness to them. She's putting her hand up.
I'm putting my hand up, please, miss. Because I am facing the bedroom, yes, and the hallway, and you've got your back to them. Yes. And actually what I've suddenly noticed is, so we've got these plain, corally, ready pink walls in here and this blue and white bedroom. And the hallway,
the linking
room, for want of a
better
word, yeah. where you come in, I'm not off the street, clearly, because it's a hotel, but where you come in off the corridor, is a patterned wallpaper that is the blue of the bedroom and the red
and the
of the walls
and the green. Look, there's a green stripe in that.
So I wonder whether, and this is quite a bold move, whether it's a wallpaper, certainly on the downstairs linking. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, a really intense House of Hackney wallpaper. You can have a quite
or
a
Sophie
one.
Robinson at Harlequin or, wallpaper, I think you'll
sorry,
find.
Sorry, have yep. you had a collection?
Yes, I think that's the
I wasn't
wallpaper
aware.
You were
You've
gonna...
never mentioned it. Maybe now would be the time. But the wallpaper Kit Kemp's got here is sort of like a fat zigzag and a thin zigzag
like a
and a
geometric.
Stripe.
Yeah.
Mm. It's quite subtle. So it looks from a distance, you know, like a stripe.
It's called Wriggle Room, that print.
So I wonder if that, a sort of softly patterned wallpaper, would bring your Brazilian carnival and link all the rooms whilst not freaking your husband out, who's a bit frightened.
I think that's a really nice idea, and I've done that in projects, actually. I've gone for a, you know, in my hallway, I've just gone for the colour. It's my cobalt blue, it's a block colour, and then I carry that little bit of blue throughout the rest of the house, whether it's a big bit of blue or a little bit of blue. But actually finding a wallpaper that has got your entire colour palette in it. You know, it could be a chintz, it could be a stripe, it could be a scenic, it could be muralistic. But then you can pull all those colours out into the rest of the room. And the clever thing about what Kit's done here is while the living room's quite bold and strong and colour saturated, the bedroom is actually got more of a white background with the Delft blue as the secondary colour. And as a result, it feels a lot more calming. And that's where you can put your husband, Luna. Stick him in
just
there.
Just put him in another room. Yeah. The other thing, again, to come back to this room. So the wallpaper is that wiggle room. And then in this very brightly coloured coral room, there are some lampshades, which are the same fabric as the hall wallpaper. So I wonder, Luna, to bring that into your own house, whether you wallpaper the hallway and up to the first floor or where the wall stops, and then perhaps if you wanted to tone it back and go for a more neutral colour on the walls up to the rest of the house, but you could have a blind or a curtain if you've got windows on your hall stairs and landing going further up, which, you know, I live in a London terrace, I don't, but you might have an opportunity to bring in the same pattern but in some fabric.
Love that idea.
I think that works. We've done that one.
Brilliant.
So following on from that question, we have another hall question actually from Deborah.
And she says, I have a darkish north-facing hallway moving into a kitchen with oak cream cupboards and magnolia walls. I like the fact she's put an exclamation mark in after that. Maybe a sin, but they work and I love them. The key accessory colour is a bright apple green and the kitchen looks straight onto the garden through large bifold doors. I will not be changing my kitchen anytime soon, so I need to decorate the hall so it flows. No surprise, it is currently magnolia. I am changing the flooring and banisters to wood to match the kitchen. I'm looking for suggestions for walls and woodwork so it flows and draws you into the space. I want it to be luxury and sophisticated. Over to you, KWS.
Oh, I like that.
Oh,
let's
go
just stop
to
there.
Luxury and sophisticated.
Well, now you see, I'm panicked now. I'm on the back foot because as you were reading that question, I had an instant idea for what I would do. But now I don't know if it's luxury and sophisticated, so I'm a bit frightened, really. But I love the idea of this accessory colour being a bright apple green. Mm. I mean, that's a great colour. And funnily enough, I was going through my Farrow & Ball paint chart yesterday for a client. And I think I must have a very old paint chart because I found this really fabulous green called Danish Lawn. So ooh. Google it and look it up. But it's probably stronger than apple. But I wonder if you love magnolia. Sophie, stop. She's allowed to like the magnolia. Back in your box. This lady likes the magnolia. So how about doing your hall walls? I'm going to say it really quick, Deborah. It's just between you and me. I've wrestled Sophie under a cushion. You can keep the magnolia on the walls if you want. But what about doing the woodwork in your apple green? Then it
yeah,
flows.
But you've been stumped, haven't you? Because she wants to do her staircase in oak to match her kitchen.
Well, she's going
to
paint it apple green. There you go.
So I would... One could do that, and that is a nice idea. But a better idea, I think, Deborah, is going to paint your walls in that Danish lawn. What are the Danish doing to their lawns to make them so green?
No idea.
We really need to find that out. I think painting your walls in a bright apple green would be brilliant. And here's the why. Because the thing with hallways is you never really hang out in them for very long. So I always say, why not go for a colour you love that you'd be worried about using in any other room on the basis that you're only ever moving through it? A bright apple green is welcoming, it's bright, it's perky, it sort of says hello and welcome, but you don't have to hang around in it because you're moving through into whatever space you're on your way to. So, I mean, I did this at home in my hallway. I painted it a really, really bold cobalt blue, probably too heavy and oppressive for me to have in a living room or a kitchen, but I love it as an interconnecting colour.
What you've done to tone it down a bit as well is you've got quite a bit of white, haven't you?
But she's got the oak, you see. The oak will do the
same. You've got white ceiling and white banister. So she's got that pale oak.
I've just been shown a picture of Danish lawn.
Have you ever heard of it? I thought I was quite familiar with the Farrow and Ball collection.
It's very strong. I was thinking more of a Granny Smith.
No. Well, no. I mean, she says hers is apple. I've just suddenly remembered that I'd never heard of this.
It's kind of really lush. It's like a baize of a snooker table. That's what it's reminding me of.
Yes.
It's that kind of colour, isn't it?
It's kind of fabulous, isn't it? And I tell you what, it loves navy blue.
I've got a feeling that is going to really freak Magnolia Deborah out. So maybe something a little softer. You don't want anything that really scares you. But I think, Deborah, go for it. You can keep your magnolia everywhere else, but why don't you just inject a pop of joyful colour in your hallway? You won't regret it. So next up, we hear from Chelsea.
Chelsea writes, my fiancé and I bought a doer-upper in April 2021. Now, by July 2021, we were ready to paint. And instead of doing what I know you'd recommend, live in the space before you paint, well, I didn't. First mistake, maybe. So I painted our open plan living room dining room a dark green, Dulux Heritage DH slate, fully drenched, skirting, radiator, architrave. Now, I don't regret it, but I think I want it gone. Admittedly, I haven't dressed the living room as I should have with colourful prints, cushions, and I chose the wrong curtains. Now, I've always wanted a pink sofa, but unfortunately, we have to live with our very drab, hand-me-down brown sofa for now. I also have a wooden dresser I'd love to paint. The room is southeast-facing with morning light. But my style has changed and now I am feeling brave with colour. So where do I start? We're currently in a position to repaint the whole room. Do I just go white and build up the colour slowly? How do I make the living room feel cosy and separate to the dining room? I've always struggled with it feeling so open. Could I decorate the space as I would decorate two separate rooms with a clear paint change through the middle? And why do I feel guilty about getting rid of the gorgeous green? If I was to incorporate wallpaper or different colour paints, how do I choose which walls to do?
Oh, Chelsea, so much to unpack. I'm exhausted.
First of all, let's not have the guilt. It's a tin of paint. I mean, let's just park that. We're not even going there. You know, although she says I feel guilty because it's a gorgeous colour.
I know.
Keep the green, wallpaper the ceiling.
Okay, first of all, I just feel like we need to clear up a very easy question. There's a lot to unpack here, but one really easy question, which was, could I decorate the space as I would two separate rooms with a clear paint change throughout the middle? No, you cannot. That would look mental. So let's not do that. I think it's fine to create different feelings. And indeed, you can use different elements and colours and patterns in different ends of the room. But you can't just decorate one room one way and then gear change to a different colour in the second half.
You've got to link it.
It's like, where's the wall gone? So you do need to treat it as an open plan space. And we know they're the hardest rooms to design. Doesn't mean the whole room has to be decorated out the same, but they do need to talk to one. They at least need to talk to one another, have a conversation.
They need to be waving, don't they?
Yeah. Rather than having their backs to each other.
I mean, one very easy way to do it is to have one room in one colour and just do the ceiling of the room in the other colour, so you've linked them like that.
Like a Battenberg cake.
Pink and yellow.
Well,
I was thinking if she keeps that green, for the sake of argument, in the one room and then takes the green skirting board through into the other and does the ceiling green in the other room and then has the walls a different colour, then they're kind of quite different, but they're linked.
Oh,
I've
that's
done
quite
that.
A nice idea.
I did that with blues once.
But where are we at with Chelsea? Honestly, because we're going around in circles. You're holding on to the green.
Well, that's
true. She wants
true.
To let it go. And I suppose the question is, Chelsea, is maybe you should have done what you already know you should have done from the get-go. Do a blimmin' mood board. Get yourself a plan. Get yourself a vision.
Work out what you like.
Work out what you like and do it on paper first. Get all your paint swatches, wallpaper swatches. Get your Pinterest board together. do the work, Chelsea. I just get this, I'm really seeing this like really overexcited Labrador puppy who's like, come on, come on, let's go to the paint shop, let's buy the paint, and really enjoying the transformation, but then realizing actually the sofa doesn't go, neither do the curtains.
It's an interesting turn of phrase you use there, do the work. I mean, you know, I suppose we're conditioned to think it's not work, aren't we? We're conditioned to think it's sort of fun and just picking colours. But actually, yes, you've got to put in some time. You've got to ask yourself some questions. You've got to answer them honestly. I mean, you know, I totally get that you can't have the pink sofa you've always wanted now, but in which case, could you have pink walls, which would probably sit quite nicely with a brown sofa?
Or the other argument would be design the room how you want it and save up and buy the pink sofa. I do a very nice pink sofa for my new collection of DFS, don't you know?
She mentioned her collections again. Can't even.
It is. It's a really nice pink. And actually, what was really lovely is it's only just gone on sale. And do you know, the first sofa they sold, I thought it was really nice. They told me what the first purchase was a pink velvet sofa. Pale pink.
There you go.
Yeah.
I remember years ago, they said, and I think they were really quite surprised by it. They said one of their best-selling sofas that wasn't grey was yellow.
Yes.
And that was right back when we started the podcast in 2018. And they were sort of slightly surprised by the success of the yellow sofa. So is pink the new yellow?
Well,
discuss.
I thought pink maybe has had its day. We've said that on the podcast more than once, haven't we? But according to Chelsea and whoever bought my first ever sofa, pink sofa's still very much in.
I think it's a classic. And I think the thing about pink is people sort of run away and go, oh, it's got to be really girly. But, you know, there's pink and there's pink. It doesn't have to be Barbie pink. And it goes with, if you pick the right shade of pink. It goes with, you know, pink and brown, pink and green, pink and yellow, pink and blue. I mean, it actually is friends with all the other colours on the spectrum. So it's much less scary than you think it's going to be.
And if you were to mix it with this lovely Dulux green slate colour that she's talking about, I mean, can you imagine a really lovely sort of rose pink with that dark green?
Lovely.
Oh, delicious.
Lovely.
But Chelsea, look, here we are. Kate and I are even going around in circles because There is infinite options open to you, is kind of what we're saying.
I think you don't know, Chelsea.
You
do
don't
you?
Know. And therefore, neither do we. But so get yourself sat down, paper and pen, get yourself pinning. Kate's got books on how you do this. I've got online courses to help you with this process. There is a design process out there that you can follow, which will stop you making mistakes like these and help you get it right second time.
And I will also say, over the man who's drilling outside, you can absolutely paint that wooden dresser. So maybe that becomes your starting point. You know, don't worry about painting the wooden dresser.
Wow. Start a decorating scheme based around a painted dresser.
Well, if that's the colour she wants to experiment with. I mean, I think what I'm trying to address there is not that that's necessarily the starting point, but, you know, she's feeling guilty about getting rid of the green. It seems to me she's asking permission
Do you think she's got a painting itch that needs scratching? Go. Chelsea, go and paint your dresser. Do a
mood
board.
You feel.
And come back and see Auntie Kate and Auntie Sophie later on.
There you go.
So next up, we have a question from one of our insiders. We've had this from Harriet. We have just moved into our dream house, a grade 2 listed property in Surrey. It's mostly magnolia and beige. Oh my gosh, Kate, have we got a theme here? I need your help, particularly for the downstairs loo, which has me paralysed. My dream would be De Gournay wallpaper all over.
Yes, my dream too, darling, but you know, fill in your lottery ticket.
Well, Harriet goes on to say, until I found out the price. But the loo is full of beams, so I think chinoiserie wallpaper isn't going to work as the beams aren't straight and the walls aren't smooth. My red thread is green, but I love reds, pinks and golds. Oh, Harriet, what a tricky question, but what a lovely home to decorate. And actually, when I was working on the Great Interior Design Challenge, back in the day with Daniel Hopwood, we used to do lots of these sort of grade 1 and grade 2 listed properties because the commissioner at BBC Two absolutely loved a bit of
I see how
British heritage
works.
Architecture.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it used to cause the designers similar problems. So this type, for anybody who perhaps isn't accustomed to this type of architecture, what you've got really old, probably Tudor type buildings, beams everywhere, not just in the ceiling, but in the walls as well. They crop up in all kinds of places. They're not symmetrical. And then the way the walls are plastered, they're not flat. They have curves to them and they have areas where they're cut in around the beams. So wallpapering can be done, but is really super tricky. So quite often these houses are just painted white or indeed Harriet Magnolia. And then you've just got kind of like beam overload. And you clearly love pattern and colour and want to embrace that in your home. And I'm here to tell you, you can, but the answer isn't wallpaper. It's time to do a bit of stenciling, a bit of hand painting.
Oh, hang on a minute. The 80s called. They want their stipple brush back.
Don't you think, though? That's what I'd be doing. I'd be getting my paintbrushes out, Harriet. Or, to be inspired by Kit Kemp, who we interviewed last week, get your potato printers out.
No, you are not doing potato print between all the beams. I think it's tricky, that, because I grew up in a house like that, and my grandmother assiduously had all the beams painted black, which was not really original because they would have been brown.
And they're brown in Harriet's house.
They are brown, which looks nice.
They're very charming.
And I have seen houses which are painted in really rich colours. And I'm going to say the sort of Farrow and Balchart. You don't really want the very clean, modern Dulux
colours.
Go for
those heritage colours.
You want heritage colours. They're a bit muddier. And I've seen rooms in orange and green and really saturated colours, but it does tend to be plain. I mean, my instinct, I've got to say, is I'm struggling a bit with the pattern and all the beams because I think it gets a bit busy. But you can, you know, my grandmother painted her beams black. You can paint your beams. They don't have to be. You can.
You've got to be careful with it so when it's listed.
Oh, that's true.
Yes, you might have to double check that. Although this is grade two listed, you might get away with it. Grade one,
a bit
definitely
more freedom
not.
With a grade two, don't you?
Yes.
I would paint the walls between the beams and I would bring the colour and pattern in the textiles and curtains. But then I'm
hard to do in a downstairs loo, though, you see, that's the problem. Bathrooms and downstairs loos where you don't get all the lovely upholstery and curtains and fabrics and things. That's what I think. I was like, little downstairs loo, come on. You know you want to, Kate. We've got you sewing.
No, I really don't want to, but you can.
We've got you putting up a shelf. I'm going to get you stenciling and stippling before the end of this podcast is out.
I can't.
Or you could do like splatter. You know, you could do like a splatterware type design, flicky, like if you masked off all the beams. No, okay, no.
But can you hear the door shutting behind me?
I think it's a wonderful opportunity, Harriet, to get a bit creative. And I think downstairs loo should be talking points. So.
Well, that's true. I mean, that I will endorse is that, you know, the downstairs loo is the place to experiment and go mad. And, you know, by all means, try some wallpaper in there because it's a small area.
No, but that's the problem, isn't it? Did you listen to this beginning of the question?
I've forgotten wallpaper.
Oh, my gosh. Get this woman another cup of peppermint tea and a biscuit. She's lost it. I think we hear you, Harriet. I would even look at like some Gustavian designs. You know, if you're worrying about it being all a bit too twee, you could look at like some really simple folklore, Gustavian kind of like designs. Or you could even, as I would do and famously am ribbed from this podcast, get someone else in who can. So our last question comes in from Helen, who is another one of our cherished insiders. Now, Helen has given us a full A4 document talking about her lovely grade two listed early Victorian Gothic cottage. She says she's recently received approval from the Conservation Department. And I can tell you what, those of you who aren't in the UK, that is a big deal.
Yes, hard work. Yes.
And she wants to point out that the cottage is the size of a thimble, but they're okay with that. They're early retirees deciding to downsize to thimble, clearly, she says. So we've got all the quaintness, neatness, tininess, just picturing a little thimble cottage. Helen had loads of questions about how she could reconfigure her space. And honestly, Helen, we just can't do that on a podcast. We need a face-to-face consultation with you. However, we did love one of your questions, which was that you have got 3,000 and counting books currently dotted around the house. You would like to know where we would put them because you dream of them all being together again. You're musing about perhaps creating a new study in your soon-to-be garage conversion, but then you worry that the garage conversion might also be needed as a bedroom if you stay on into your dotage. So, Kate, I feel like I need to look to you because I love this question. What does even 3,000 books and counting look like? And what would you do with them? Because you must be on 3,000 books by now, aren't you?
Well, I'm really struggling to imagine. We had 68 boxes of books.
Yes.
But I mean, I don't know. And I do remember...
68 boxes of books. Yes. Well, I'm guessing like 50 in a box. So you're not even on 3,000
No,
yet.
I don't think
that's a lot of books because you've got a lot of books, Kate.
But I also remember watching the documentary, or one of probably many documentaries about Karl Lagerfeld, who had a massive book collection. I think he might have had 30,000 books. And he used to buy a lot of them from this little French bookseller. And she was interviewed in this documentary. And she was heartbroken when she died because he basically funded her life. And now he was dead. And she didn't know who was going to buy the books anymore. I mean, that's the story I want to read. But
this is, okay, so this isn't 30,000 Karl Lagerfeld size, but this is 3,000 books in a thimble-sized cottage.
Well,
so
I mean, they're a big feature. She's got to build a library. She's got to run for president, become president, and then she gets a presidential library built. I mean, that's all you can do, isn't it? If you want to keep them all together.
Yeah.
Does she mention converting the garage?
Yeah, I like that idea, but converting the garage into a library, but then also possibly being a bedroom. But you could have a bedroom library, could you not? I don't think they should be exclusive to one another. I quite like the idea of lying in bed wrapped around by walls of books.
Oh, it'd be fabulous.
What don't you think?
It'd be fabulous. I mean, space-wise, the really good thing to do would be to have a Murphy bed, which is one of those beds that folds up against the wall.
Oh.
And then you fold it down and you're surrounded by books. But it's possible that she hasn't got the space because she needs that
you
space.
You can even get bedesks.
I beg your pardon?
Bedesks.
Oh, bed desks.
Beds that convert into desks by day. And it's the same thing. It's all cantilevered on like enormous hydraulic kind of lever thing. Talking out of my comfort zone now, aren't I? But basically, it's a bed by night and then you flip it up and it does some amazing transformer routine and then ends up being a desk.
That sounds cool. I mean, the problem, I think, Helen, if we're honest, is I don't think we've really got a sensible answer for you here. We're just aghast at the fact that you've got 30,000 books. But
well, I think it's a brilliant question, actually, because I think what Helen's doing is she's giving us an indication. I mean, floor plans aside, this is the bit I'm interested in, because this is who Helen is. She is a book. Mm-hmm. She's a Karl Lagerfeld level book collector. And I think it should be really celebrated. You say they're dotted around the house. I really love the idea. If you're really into something, into collecting stuff, whatever it is, coloured glass, nail polish boxes, handbags, jelly moulds, books, whatever your thing is, somehow by bringing them all together and grouping them in one place can create even more of a statement visual impact than dispersing them all around your house.
Well, she's clearly got enough to do both. I mean, I think absolutely you need a library, end of. I mean,
and
you just build yourself a library.
And how would you do that? What's your advice to build a library? Because I've never had one, but you've had a few.
Well, I've had lots of shelves. I mean, you know, again, Helen doesn't tell us what books they are. I mean, you know, they might need, because you have those fabulous bookshelves in stately homes, which are sort of behind almost wire netting, isn't it? I think that's to stop people touching them. But, you know, do they need glass shelves in front of them to protect them?
Really,
or
valuable.
Is it just, or is it 3,000 Gilly Coopers? You know, I mean, we don't know if they're
paperbacks.
Let's go with
the more the Gilly Cooper rather than the stately home priceless books.
I mean, I don't know how much space that takes, but what you do need to establish if you want to store them is what's the biggest number of books the same size you have. So, for example, paperbacks are actually quite small, and if the bulk of the collection is paperbacks, your shelves can be quite narrow. Or, again, if it's paperbacks, you can build shelves twice as wide and double stack them. So, you know, I would absolutely go floor to ceiling.
Why would you go floor to ceiling? What's
because
the
I think
that's
that? I just think that's more impressive. I love floor to ceiling.
Yeah, like
books.
A wall
it looks
of
amazing.
Books.
You go round the corner. Mm. I have tended to start mine, sort of have the skirting board at the front of the shelf so it looks like it's part of the architecture of the room, and then go shelves all the way up as high as you can at the top. And I mean, this is contentious. We all know how I feel about colour coordinating your books.
For anybody who's a new listener, Kate does not like it when people colour coordinate their books.
Shall I tell you why?
Oh, let's
Shall
hear it
I
one
tell
more
you
time.
Why? And I think Helen's going to agree with me on this. Because I think if you're colour coordinating your books, you're turning them into styling tools. Mm. And if you've got 3,000 books, they are not styling tools. That is your library. That's your history. That's information. Your coffee table is for colour coordinated books.
Oh.
Coffee table's a styling tool.
Oh.
Colour coordinate them on your coffee table if you want. I think you need them in library. I have them how they fall. Other people like to do them alphabetically. Some people like to do them by genre. I think that's very difficult because you might have a disagreement about what a book is. I don't like them alphabetical because I can never remember the author.
You don't want to feel like you're in Waterstones.
In an actual library, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes. I like books how they fall, you know, when they come out of the box.
I like a jumbled up book.
It does make it difficult to find the thing you're looking for. Although I find in our house, we tend to, because there are books, we tend to have a vague sort of encyclopedic knowledge of what is where. You know, might not know exactly which shelf, but we'll know it's in that
area.
Do you
read these books, Kate?
We have, so they're half my husband's and half mine, pretty much. So he's read his and I've read mine. I don't know how much mixing there has been. Some
but
of them
do you
them
go back and
got.
Read them again?
Sometimes, yeah. And yeah. and our
so
children
why do you
are reading
keep
them. Because, that's the age-old question, because there's lots of people, don't they, go, I've read that paperback and, you know, I know what happens. I'm never going to read it again, so I'll get rid of it.
Yeah, that's me.
Well, I probably won't remember the story, in all honesty. I read fast and I read for relaxation. So it's as much about spending time with a book as remembering every verb right. and page turn. But what I do remember really clearly when I pick up a book is I remember where I was when I read it. So for me, my library of books is a kind of diary of my life, because I can go, I have no idea what happens in
Gosh,
that. Don't know who done
a,
it.
That's a big
but
diary.
But I know, yeah, I well, don't do anything by halves. I know I read that on holiday in yes. France 20 years ago. And
you
so
enjoy doing that as you're perusing through your
I love that.
Books.
And actually, funnily enough, my son, my 23-year-old, was looking through the books yesterday for something to read. And he found a book and he said, oh, you know, have you read this? And I said, no, that's Dad's. I haven't read it. And he was flicking through it. And I don't know where my husband got it from, but he's clearly picked it up from somewhere. And there was a really old piece of paper in it. And it said on it, I can't remember, that there was an address and 4:30 Tuesday. And then on the back, it said milk, eggs, sugar, chops.
Oh,
and my son thought that was really chops. Chops is such an old-fashioned
chops,
word.
Chops, come
Pork
on.
Pork or lamb, who
let's
knows?
Get the chops
but
in.
That's a shopping list from the 70s,
yes,
isn't it? Or even before.
Oh, I'm going to go and buy some chops on my way home today.
I love that. So that all that books hide treasures. Mm. And you do, you know, my books have got old postcards in and stamps and notes and all that kind of thing. So you know, Helen says she doesn't know how to store them, but they're staying and I'm with her.
So I suppose it's celebrating them and having them in a place where they can evoke all those lovely memories. Yeah. I know that in the past, we've talked on the podcast, I think it was during lockdown, that we stumbled across a new business model where people would buy books for your bookshelves. There was this whole like book curator service going on. Oh, and they yeah. probably fall into the same category as, you know, sort of home edit, decluttering home stylists, people who kind of just make your home look Instagram ready.
Yeah.
And you were really upset about that. I
yes.
remember.
Yes.
The fact that the thought that you could buy a library of books that actually have no meaning or no memories to you.
But the other thing that people are always really shocked is they see I have all those books, but I have a Kindle. And people are always outraged by the fact that I have a Kindle.
Why do you have a Kindle?
I love my Kindle.
What?
Well, partly because, funnily enough, my house, and they've not yet come up with the technology for this, elastic walls. So, you know, my bookshelves are full and I haven't got space to build any more shelves. But I...
But what are you going to do with your memories on a Kindle case?
Well, no, but they're there because I'll tell you why I love a Kindle.
I love it.
I'll tell you why. Because I'm someone who gets really panicked that I might run out of things to read. And the reason I love a Kindle is because I not only have I got a full library of books in something the size of my hand, but if I run out, I can buy another one.
You can buy another one just like that.
Just like that.
So you have book anxiety. My son, yes. Arthur, takes the mickey out of me for having coat anxiety.
You have coat anxiety?
I have coat anxiety. Should I or shouldn't I take a coat? Honestly, it's my biggest problem.
And having decided you must take a coat, which coat?
And I've just been thinking about why that's my thing. And for you...
It's book. I must have a book.
You must have a book.
I mean, if the tube breaks down or gets stuck, you know, or if I'm in a lift
and
the lift breaks down, I haven't got a book.
Then
that's panic station.
Yes, you have to plan. You have to plan.
I must have
these.
A book.
Yes.
You know, years in the 70s, reading the cereal packet at breakfast over and over and over again because I wasn't allowed to read a book at the table. And still, I don't necessarily approve of reading a book at the table unless I'm on my own. But I must have a book with me.
Or a cereal packet, clearly.
Well, not quite enough going on a modern cereal packet. But yes, book anxiety. I like it. That's what I've got.
So, Helen.
Good luck with your books.
We might have gone down a bit of a wormhole there. But we loved your very long letter.
Wormhole.
And it sent us down. Yeah, it sent us down an alley that we didn't think we were going to go. But we hope we've given you some ideas and inspiration. And do send us some pictures of your library book room when it's completed. It sounds great. So, Kate, that wraps up our last Style Surgery for a while.
Are you going to make me leave this hotel room? She would just keep going.
We'll just keep going.
It's like a filibuster. We'll just keep recording until they throw us out.
Lamyard Hotel until we go. Oh, I love that. So all that remains is to thank our ever patient, fabulous producer, Sarah Cudden of Feast Collective.
And we'll see you in the great indoors.